1223 to 1449 that transpired over the previous 3 years. And he challenged those increases on a number of bases, among others that the housing was not in substantial compliance with the housing code when those increases were taken. He also alleged reductions in services and facilities, and he detailed those in an attachment to the tenant petition. There was an evidentiary hearing before Judge England that began September 24th, 2013, so later that same year. And Mr. Petropoulos appeared pro se. He was there and did not have an easy time. He called first one witness and then began testimony of a second witness. The first witness was Benoit Brookins, the second was Mr. Rudy Douglas. And in the middle of the testimony of the second witness, there was legal argument about the relevance of a pending court of appeals case that the tenant was arguing had impacted this case. And as I understand it, his argument was that other case would affect the validity of his starting rent, even though from many, many years ago. And Judge England did not have an easy time dealing with that issue. And so upon the suggestion of the tenant, he continued the September 24th hearing until October 8th of that same year, asked the parties to provide submissions, written submissions about what's going on at the Court of Appeals. So the parties came back on October 8th. Before he continued the matter on September 24th, Judge England admonished the parties, please be sure to be ready to continue with the evidentiary hearing once this matter is resolved and figured out. October 8th comes along, and I believe both parties submitted something. The submissions are not in the record as far as I can tell, but the recording says that the judge has something from both parties. But the judge does not rule on that issue and does not come to a decision about that. During that hearing, another tenant, Benoit Brookins, who was the witness for Mr. Petropoulos, one witness, makes a motion to intervene and argues that he should be part of this case. Basically, by consent of the parties, the judge then says, not only by consent of the parties, by the suggestion of the housing provider. The counsel for housing provider said that this is a surprise to her. She would like to file an opposition. The judge set a briefing schedule and asked the parties to submit briefings on this motion to intervene, and adjourned the hearing for that day and said we're done for today. At the end of that hearing, that was a fairly brief hearing. December comes around, and the counsel for the housing provider, Deb Leggy, files her opposition. In that opposition, which she files and which is part of the record here, she lists some background, which we think is very accurate, talking about how on September 4th, the evidentiary hearing did not conclude on that day, but was instead continued until October 8th. On the date of that continued evidentiary hearing, a motion to intervene was filed by the potential interveners. The evidentiary hearing was halted so that briefing could occur on five issues, and those issues were basically relating to the motion to intervene, and then still this impact of the Court of Appeals case was the fifth issue that the judge wanted briefing on. As far as I can tell, the tenant did not submit a brief on that. But then the next thing that happened in this case was that the judge issued the final order in this case almost 3 years later. So July of 2016, the judge rules on the motion to intervene, but then throws in at the end his dismissal of the whole case with prejudice. And our position is that is highly flawed. Judge England cites Rule 2822.5, which she correctly says, which says that if a party has presented all of its evidence on an issue on which it has the burden of proof, and the presiding ALJ concludes that the party has failed to meet its burden, the ALJ may find against the party on that issue without awaiting the close of all the evidence in that case. Judge England does not say petition, the tenant presented all his evidence. He's saying that he listened to the basically one and a half witnesses that tenant presented and called, And as I read it, he's sort of saying that he doesn't think that the tenant is going to be able to, that the tenant seems to be on the wrong track and is arguing things that are too old and things that are not relevant, and that therefore he's just going to rule. And that is not what 2822.5 says. It says if the tenant is done, and that's such a huge, important distinction that that I'm urging, hoping that the commission will agree. Mr. Petropoulos had not yet testified himself. He would have been the best witness. This is about mostly about his unit that in the tenant petition, and he was calling. It's not. I don't know whether he knew that he could testify. There was, but he had not yet testified. The second witness was not yet done. So there's just, at best, you can say that the judge was frustrated, skeptical, but he had no authority to end the hearing without giving the tenant some opportunity to finish. So he could have said, "I'm frustrated. I'm going to give you another half hour," but he didn't. He just, the posture was, "We're stopping in the middle so that I judge can consider this motion to intervene and some potentially relevant issues about the Court of Appeals," and then the next thing that everyone heard was almost 3 years later, case is over, with very, very little explanation, and certainly none that we think is meritorious. So our first argument is just this case is not done, and we're asking the commission send it back to allow Mr. Petropoulos to finish it. Our second argument is that the judge says that Mr. Petropoulos, who is now here with me, failed to introduce evidence, and really, I think he says any evidence, or certainly not sufficient evidence, and I think that the record reflects that one of the Mr. Benoit Brookins did testify about a number of reductions in services that the judge should have addressed. If he was right in ending things, then he should have addressed what Mr. Brookins was testifying about. He testified that there was a loss of square footage in his backyard. He testified that there was noise from construction. He testified that there was a loss of a grocery store. The landlord objected, saying it's a commercial grocery store, and so it was a tenant, and it shouldn't matter. But that's for the judge to decide. In fact, the judge overruled the landlord's objection and said, "I'm going to allow Mr. Brookins to testify about that," and Mr. Brookins did. There was a dry cleaner on the premises, a front door man, Mr. Brookins testified, secretarial services, laundry could get done. So our second point is that the judge has just sort of glossed over Mr. Brookins' testimony, and so that we believe was error. The third point that we would make is that Mr. Petropoulos was pro se, and our position is that when there is a pro se litigant who is not experienced in the law, that the judge has an affirmative obligation to facilitate, to not just let the tenant dig his or her own grave, and this is from both the
Can I interrupt you
sure,
really quickly?
Of course.
So, in a notice of appeal,
yeah,
the second bullet, I guess, for lack of a better word, says that the ALJ erred in not explaining to tenant, a pro se party, in sufficient detail and with sufficient clarity the procedural requirements for prosecuting a tenant petition at an evidentiary hearing. Is it your contention that that's the ALJ's job in a way?
Yes.
Go ahead. Proceed with
it. And just on this notice of appeal, we are withdrawing point number four, just for cleanup. So we're not pursuing the fourth issue on the notice of appeal. But yes, and so specifically, what the judge, we believe, should have done but did not do was ask, "Are you going to testify? Do you know you can testify?" So that's one question. There was a discussion about the rule on witnesses that the landlord invoked, and so the judge actually said, "All witnesses, please leave." And when a judge says, "All witnesses, please leave," and the tenant is there, seeing the witnesses all leave, and the judge saying every witness has to leave, it's not a crazy conclusion that. So how does that work if I'm both the tenant and the witness? And so yes, I believe that the judge had an obligation, and I'll be happy to tell you where that obligation comes from. So that's one. Number two is there was quite a long discussion about exhibits in the record, exhibits that had been submitted by both parties. And so there was discussion about that the copies that were given out to Mr. Petropoulos were one-sided, whereas some of the copies actually should have been two-sided. And so clearly there were some stack of documents that both sides had submitted. And so I believe that a judge has an obligation to say, tell me about the exhibits. Are you going to talk to me about these exhibits, photos or other evidence? And so none of that happened.
So if we're looking at this notice of appeal and there's no brief that's filed, how do we know with any specificity where that failure took place for number two?
The failure...
To have, like, this seems to be the first time the argument's been put forth with detail.
Yes. I don't believe there's a requirement to provide detail.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there is one either. Okay. But just if I'm looking at it again, if I'm looking at number two.
Yeah. So I think you're asking me, there's this. So by the way, the judge says it's a 5-hour hearing. It went from 10 to roughly 3, but it was roughly 2.5 hours that were on the record. There was breaks, lunch break, et cetera. And so if you're asking how can I point to where the judge didn't say this, that's kind of an impossibility because I can't say, you know, I can tell you where things happened and I have enough detail that I can tell you where discussions happened in the record where I think that could have happened, but frankly the judge could have said that any time in the hearing and it would have been fine. But I can tell the commission where the discussions were about the exhibits. But if the question is when should the judge have said this, I can tell you where he said call your witness. I don't think I can satisfy the court about where that should have happened. It could have happened anywhere. And my submission to the court is that it did not happen anywhere. And the only way to, unfortunately, there's no transcript, and so the only way to get that is someone I think has to listen to it, or I don't know if there's a way to provide a transcript or I don't know.
Isn't the larger issue before the commission is point number two is fairly broad stroke, big picture. It could mean many things. For example, one could read, you know, the administrative law judge erred in not explaining to the tenant, a pro se party, in sufficient detail with sufficient clarity the procedural requirements for prosecuting a tenant petition. And one could think, well, it's not the judge's responsibility to teach a pro se party how to present his case. Rather, the case law says the judge is to perhaps give some leeway in how a party would go about introducing evidence that they want to, but not necessarily to prompt the party to introduce any particular thing. Like, my point is that there are many different interpretations to prong number two, and without a brief, it's difficult to determine what it is that you're actually arguing, and this is the first time that we're hearing what point number two means. I think that's the real issue that we're trying to...
Okay. I will refer the commission to... And so if you're saying that we have some burden of saying what the judge should have done, I feel like what I'm doing now...
No, what your argument is.
Yeah. But that's... I'm making that here. And I think the rules of the commission allow me to make that argument here. I don't think there's a requirement to... But I hear you, that it's hard, and I sympathize with the job of the commission to go off of an oral argument on a complicated issue like that. But I would, in terms of the law, I would refer the commission to the 2012 Code of Judicial Conduct, which says that the judge has an affirmative role in facilitating the ability of every person. This is Rule 2.6, the right to be heard according to law, ensuring the right to be heard according to law. And the steps that judges may consider in facilitating this are providing information about the process, asking neutral questions to elicit or clarify information. Those are two that I would highlight. And then there's a case, Padue, which basically says that that there is actually an obligation on a judge to explain and give notice before things are too late, before it's too late. And that was in that case, it was a summary judgment issue. Here, this was a directed verdict, which is kind of the same, in my view. That again, the judge should have said, look, are you done? Because I'm going to rule and give notice that he was about to rule on whether there was sufficient evidence presented, even though they were in the middle of the case. So that's kind of the basic one. And that should have happened at the end, really. I mean, and my contention is that these continuances and the procedural posture were such that this was just not done. And I can give you a quote from the judge in the site where he says, please be ready to continue with the evidentiary hearing.
But that doesn't really have to do with the fact that we have a pro se party. No. I mean, that argument rests in the judge should have given the parties guidance as to when he was closing evidence, whether he wasn't, whether, you know, urged the parties, let's go forward with what we can today, and then the record's going to be closed on these issues. I'm going to leave it open just on this one other DCCA case, and that's relevance. Like, that doesn't rest in either party being a pro se.
I agree, and I think that's our lowest argument, and I think the commission could resolve this. If he had been represented, his counsel would have been screaming bloody murder that this, what, there's now an order? So absolutely, this does not rest on him being pro se, but that adds to the, in my view, the injustice of, on a procedural, on this kind of record, saying I'm done. But no, I agree with you that we don't need that to win here.
We'll give you a few more minutes before.
Sure, and maybe what I'll do on rebuttal is provide those citations just so that if that's helpful to the record.
We'll give you time to do that now.
I think it'd be helpful for me to do that while I'm listening, unless you want it now. Would you prefer it now?
Oh, if you prefer to do it later,
I prefer to do it later.
Fine.
Yeah,
okay.
then I can get that together. Let me just think if there's anything else. How many minutes have I taken? Is that accurate or?
Yeah,
that,
it's accurate.
That's telling me that I've used what?
No, that's saying that's the time.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
I started around 11:03, so it takes me typically a few minutes. So you're pushing.
Okay. So why don't I just stop there and
okay.
reserve my 5 minutes later? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. Again, Richard Lutz representing the housing provider respondent. We feel a little bit ambushed today by counsel putting into the record matters that should have been set forth in a brief and could easily have been set forth in a brief, and we would have had an opportunity to respond to those, but we'll do the best we can. With respect to the argument concerning the judge's obligation, I would make two points. One is that it certainly sounds to me like what the appellant is asking is that the commission hold that an administrative law judge must go beyond being an impartial judge and be an advocate for a pro se litigant. If Mr. Petropoulos wanted assistance, he certainly had the ability to ask the judge for that, and to the extent that the judge could do so consistent with his obligations, I'm sure the judge would have done so, but the record doesn't reflect that happened. And the court should know, or the commission should know, that this is not the first time that Mr. Petropoulos has appeared in a petition in the Office of Administrative Hearings involving the rent administrator. So he was not a novice. He had appeared in other proceedings in the past involving the same problem. With respect to the other two issues, I think they're both subsumed under one umbrella that if the commission listens to the recording of the hearing will confirm is the case, and that all of the arguments that were presented on behalf of Mr. Petropoulos related to earlier cases, the judge says not only that there was a five-hour hearing, but he also specifically says that he gave Mr. Petropoulos the opportunity to articulate the relief he was seeking, and he repeatedly references the fact that between Mr. Douglas and Mr. Brookins, and Mr. Brookins has not been a tenant of this building since 1981, that they were constantly referring to proceedings that started one in 1979 and one in 1984 before Mr. Petropoulos had ever become a tenant. He didn't become a tenant of the property until 1995. And if one looks at those proceedings, one will not only conclude that they covered periods, and there was a cutoff in those proceedings that preceded his tenancy, but that as of the date of this hearing, the commission had finally ruled that those petitions, and this was in 2012, were dismissed. So the issues that the parties were asked to brief, as are articulated in the judge's order and the briefs are in the record, pertained to two things. One was an effort to expand the proceeding that was sought to incorporate somehow these prior petitions into this case, and the other was to allow Mr. Brookins to intervene in the case, notwithstanding the fact that, as I said, he hasn't been a tenant since 1981. Based on the arguments presented and the record below, and the fact that the judge, as he states, gave the petitioner ample opportunity to articulate the relief he was seeking and the basis for that relief, and his having, according to the judge, failed to do so within the requirements of the statute, we submit that he was well within his jurisdictional and judicial power to dismiss the petition after that length of time, and that there was no evidence to sustain any kind of award to this petition, that the evidence that was being presented really related to other people and to periods that preceded this petition's tenancy. And for that reason, we submit that the decision of the administrative law judge should be upheld.
Anything else?
Nothing further.
Okay. Thank you. So, just with respect to the one of the points that my colleague just made, that Mr. Petropoulos was unable to, and the judge does say that he felt unable to hear from Mr. Petropoulos what the relief was, what the remedies were. But there was a colloquy, and this is the first cite and cut that I will list. This is, so I'm going to call it cut four, because there were about, I don't know, nine segments or segment four of the hearing on September 24th. At zero, at the very beginning, there's a discussion where Judge England says that he just took a break and he had asked the tenant to review the tenant petition that he filed that consists of the tenant petition and a typed enclosure that goes into some detail as to the violations as being alleged. The tenant has stated for the record and has verified the accuracy and completeness of the tenant petition that was filed on January 1. Mr. Petropoulos says, yes, I do. I mean, things could be added, but this was definitely, I guess I reserve the right to add things to it. And then there was some discussion about that, but he clearly adopted at the beginning of this hearing the tenant petition, and so incorporated everything that he alleged and sought in the tenant petition that way. And the judge gave him time to do that very carefully. I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes to look through this or longer. And that's a point where I believe the judge could also then have, he wasn't under oath then, so it wasn't technically testimony, but that's a technicality that the judge could have helped with. At cut five on the same day, at the very beginning, that's where the long colloquy happens, and by approximately 10 minutes long or 12 minutes about exhibits. That's at cut number five. At same cut, at 12 minutes and 30 roughly into that, Judge says, Mr. Petropoulos, do you wish to call your first witness? And then the counsel for the landlord invoked the rule of witnesses, or the judge reminded everybody that she had done so. So anyone who's in the room at this time who will be called to testify, please step out of the hearing room. Someone will come to get you. Mr. Petropoulos says, do the witnesses need to sign in? And yes, they should sign in. Then same cut, so number six, at 26 minutes, the judge is asking, what are we here? What do you want your witnesses to testify about? The judge asks Pete, and Peter says, there were rent increases done while there were housing code violations. And more importantly, there were illegal, some inaudible stuff, rent increases made, which is the heart of this tenant petition. Then at segment seven of the same day, September 24th, roughly at minute 14 and a half is where the testimony from Benoit Brookins begins, where it's roughly 10 minutes of testimony about physical stuff, loss of services, and parking space no longer available, doorman not there anymore, noise, construction. Now there's a fence. There was a grocery store in the basement. And then at 19 minutes, the landlord objects about the commercial tenant, and the judge overrules that. And that goes up to 20 minutes, roughly. 22 minutes, he continues, convenience store. That's the section where Mr. Brookins is testifying about facts. And then in segment eight, almost at 16 minutes in, Mr. Patopoulos says, this is where he makes his motion to continue. The only thing I can ask is that this case is pertinent. I would ask for a continuance until this case is resolved, and we can come back later to decide whether anything else is relevant as far as the statute of limitations, because I wanted to try to find out from Mr. Douglas what was happening, what's going to be filed. And then after some time later, that is granted. At 30 minutes, same cut eight, the judge says, I might have to consider a continuance, a short one, just to give somebody the opportunity to come up with an order. And then cut 11, at the very end of that hearing, the judge says, this is at 0 minutes in cut 11, the judge says the matter is continued until October 8th, granted the continuance for purposes of allowing the parties in the room to consider if there is in fact an order in the matter that is currently before the Court of Appeals in which the tenant petitioner is a party. And then at 2:17 of the same cut, and I'm asking the parties to be prepared to move forward with the evidentiary phase of this hearing immediately once I make a determination about the impact of the Court of Appeals case. Any questions? Basically, no. And then at the very end of the last, so cut four of October 8th is where the judge says, we are adjourned for today. And I think everyone is undisputed that no one rested. He never asked Pete, are you done? In fact, the second witness was interrupted. So our main contention is that this hearing just was not finished, and the judge does not have, it's not up to the judge to predict whether, how it's going to turn out the next day or the next week or with the next witness. And if the judge can say, look, I'm frustrated. I'm going to give you another half an hour or 10 minutes or something and give you some warning. If you have anything else, give it to me. But that just never happened. And so Pete was unable. He was literally not heard, not in a way that he could provide testimony or did provide testimony. And so our main contention is that this case just is not done, was not done, and should be allowed to finish.
Thank you. All right. It is 11:35 a.m. And this hearing is adjourned. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.